I would have loved to continue this discussion with Mr. Ali Salam, editor-in-chief of Basira Press, joining us live from Tehran, and Ramiro Funes, activist and commentator from Los Angeles. But that's all the time that we have. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us on this edition of Spotlight.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with Ayah 260 to 263 of Surah Baqarah, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. وَإِذْ قَالَ إِبْرَاهِيمُ رَبِّ أَرِنِي كَيْفَ تُحْيِي الْمَوْتَى قَالَ أَوَلَمْ تُؤْمِنْ قَالَ بَلَى وَلَكِنْ لِيَطْمَئِنَّ قَلْبِي قال فخذ أربعة من الطير فصرهن إليك ثم اجعل على كل جبل منهن جزءا ثم ادعهن يأتينك سعيا واعلم أن الله عزيز حكيم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة مئة حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون قول معروف ومغفرة خير من صدقة يتبعها أذى والله غني حليم
In the name of Allah, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. And when Abraham said, "My Lord, show me how you revive the dead," he said, "Do you not believe?" He said, "Yes, indeed, but in order that my heart may be at rest." He said, "Take four of the birds, then cut them into pieces, and place a part of them on every mountain. Then call them, they will come to you, hastening. And know that Allah is Almighty and All-Wise." Those who spend their wealth in the way of Allah and then do not follow what they have spent with reproaches and affronts, they shall have their reward near their Lord, and they will have no fear, nor will they grieve. An honorable word with pardon is better than a charity followed by affront, and Allah is all-sufficient, most forbearing.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Israeli forces killed scores of Palestinian civilians in indiscriminate strikes across Gaza as the death toll from the regime's campaign of genocide exceeds 32,600. New report says the Biden administration has quietly authorized the transfer of billions of dollars in bombs and fighter jets to Israel in recent days. And the Islamic resistance in Iraq targets an Israeli military site in the occupied Golan Heights in support of the Palestinians in Gaza. The death toll in Gaza continues to mount amid unrelenting Israeli bombing. Northern Gaza City has been the focus of the latest airstrikes, where at least 17 people have been killed in two attacks targeting the Shujaa suburb. Among those killed, 10 policemen tasked with securing delivery of aid to displaced Gazans. Elsewhere in Gaza City, at least 20 Palestinian civilians, including women and children, were killed in attacks on a vehicle and residential building near Al-Shifa Hospital. As a result of almost 6 months of U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza, over 32,600 people have been killed and over 75,000 others injured. And joining us for an update from the central Gaza city of Deir al-Balah is Moti Abu Musabib. Hello, Moti. What can you tell us?
Actually, the Israeli occupation forces continued and maintained their airstrikes and attacks against several areas of Gaza Strip. Over the last night, those attacks were intensified against Gaza City. And as you know, that the current brutal Israeli aggression is still continued against Al-Shifa Medical Complex and the surrounding areas of the complex that were subjected to heavy bombardments of the Israeli airstrikes. Several and cruel Israeli airstrikes targeted the residential buildings there amid heavy gunfire and constant shelling of the Israeli tanks. Needless to mention that the eastern parts of the city, particularly Al-Zaytun neighborhood, also was targeted by constant Israeli shelling of the Israeli artillery. The entire situation in Gaza City, particularly the eastern part and the eastern and the western parts of the city, is still tense over those continuous and relentless Israeli airstrikes and attacks. While in the central area of Gaza Strip here, the Israeli warplanes carried out several Israeli airstrikes against the northern part of the central city, particularly Al-Mughraga neighborhood, and even Al-Zawada neighborhood, they were subjected to continuous and to relentless Israeli airstrikes amid heavy bombardments of the Israeli artillery that were maintained against the eastern part of the city. We are talking about the Al-Burej and Deir al-Balah city. They were subjected to continuous attacks of the Israeli artillery, while the western part of the central area of Gaza Strip, including Al-Nusayrat refugee camp and Al-Zawada neighborhood, they were subjected to constant and chronic attacks of the Israeli military boats that opened the gunfire towards the coastal areas of those areas. I mean the Al-Nusayrat refugee camp and Al-Zawada refugee camp. While when it comes to Khan Yunis city, as you know, the current situation is still catastrophic and dreadful, as the Israeli aggression is still maintained against the western parts of the city, including the vicinity of the Nasser Medical Complex and the Al-Amal Hospital. As over the last night, the Israeli war with the Israeli occupation forces continued targeting and blowing up more residential squares and buildings, destroying more houses of the Palestinian people there. In addition to that, the Israeli warplanes also carried out several Israeli airstrikes against the eastern parts of Khan Yunis city, including Khuza'a neighborhood. It is located in the eastern part of the city. It was under heavy bombardments of the belt of fire that was carried out over the last night. When it comes to Rafah city, the situation was the same, including the continuous airstrikes and the chronic Israeli artillery shelling that was maintained against the eastern part of the city, in addition to the southern part and the parts adjacent and the areas adjacent to the Egyptian border. The current Israeli aggression is still continued against all areas of Gaza Strip that included the continuous and the relentless Israeli airstrikes and the continuous artillery shelling. On the other hand, the Palestinian resistance also continued its gunfight and counterattacks against the Israeli occupation forces, particularly in the battlefields of the Ashifa Square and Al-Amal and Nasser Medical Complex Square. Counterattacks were conducted by the Palestinian resistance against the Israeli tanks as Al-Qassam brigades announced that they have engaged in multiple gunfights with those Israeli occupation forces, and they have targeted several Israeli tanks in those areas. We are talking about roughly 174 consecutive days of this genocidal war that is still underway in Gaza Strip, across all areas of Gaza Strip, that left and inflicted massive destruction in all areas of Gaza Strip, while the Palestinian resistance is still able to fight back against the Israeli occupation forces. They are still able to target the Israeli tanks and to engage in fierce clashes with the Israeli occupation forces.
What can you tell us with respect? Has anything changed when it comes to access to basic commodities, food, fuel, clean drinking water, and medicine?
Yes, actually, it is the same policy for the Israeli occupation forces to use starvation and famine as a weapon of war against the Palestinian people. This means that Gaza City and the northern part of Gaza Strip is still deprived of having any real access to those basic humanitarian aid and needs. The Israeli occupation forces are still raveling and stalling the delivery of those humanitarian needs to those people, knowing that 700,000 Palestinian civilians are still trapped in those areas. They are starving. They have no food, no water. They have no real access to those basic humanitarian needs. In addition to that, the Israeli occupation forces deliberately and intentionally target the Palestinian popular communities and committees that were formed in order to secure and to organize the process of delivering those humanitarian aid to the people. As you know, that yesterday the Israeli occupation forces committed an appalling massacre after targeting those members in Al-Shuja'iyya Club, 17 Palestinian civilians, including many police officers and police members in Gaza, who were supposed to protect and to secure those humanitarian aid in order to be delivered to the needy people inside Gaza City. So the Israeli war and the humanitarian necessities and the humanitarian aid is still continued relentlessly in a way that deepens the suffering of the Palestinian people and making sure that the people are having no real access to those basic humanitarian needs amid these continuous and these relentless Israeli airstrikes and attacks.
Thank you, Moti. Stay safe. We'll talk to you soon. Moti Abu Musavit joining us from the central Gaza city there of Deir Abala. Meanwhile, at least 100 more Palestinians have been killed in the past day in Israel's relentless bombing and shelling campaign in Gaza. The regime continues pounding the besieged territory in defiance of UN Security Council resolution calling for an immediate ceasefire.
Kill women and the elderly, people who are not at fault in this war. They are innocent people. We are talking about children. This is a little girl. What has she done wrong?
They were asleep and unaware of anything. Mr. Kamal was an English teacher who has been an educator his whole life. They had no hand in anything. But the enemy's planes mercilessly bombed the house, leaving no one alive in the family. The children were asleep. Look, he's sleeping like this, like he always does. They targeted the house while they were inside.
The home houses more than 50 people, four or five families, including mostly children and women, civilian residents confined to their apartments. A rocket was dropped on their four-story building without prior warning or notice.
Those who died, all of them were children, women, and elderly. There is just one child. The rest were all infants, 1 month to 4 months. This is not a war. This is extermination. Trees, animals, houses, universities, schools, children, and women are all being exterminated.
President of the International Medical Charity Doctors Without Borders says there's been no change on the ground in Gaza despite a recent UN Security Council resolution calling for an immediate ceasefire and flow of aid.
We haven't seen any change after this resolution on the ground. We haven't seen any impact in the people's lives there every day. We haven't seen any impact in our ways of delivering the humanitarian aid. The situation remains the same, and our asks remain the same. And these are the sustained, immediate ceasefire. We want to stop being attacked in our medical facilities. We want to stop being attacked with our medical staff. We have to protect the people that they provide the medical health care in the Gazan population. And we would like to have an unhindered humanitarian aid delivery in Gaza at this moment, which is not the case at all. We try also to meet primary health needs of the population. And I will give you an example that really shocked the international community when they saw that pregnant women, that they have to undergo a cesarean section. They had to be literally kicked out of the hospital after a couple of hours because there were no beds. Now MSF has increased the capacity of beds in order to offer at least some quality of care to these women.
The International Court of Justice on Thursday issued an order for Israel to take all necessary and effective measures to ensure that basic supplies arrive in Gaza without delay. Let's listen to reactions from some Palestinians in the war-ravaged strip on this latest ICJ ruling.
Humanitarian conditions are miserable. We want a solution. We need a solution. The aid that goes to northern Gaza does not reach the needy ones, while the aid that arrives in the southern Gaza is being sold in the markets in retail or wholesale.
(laughs)
It was a courageous and good decision by the International Court of Justice, but will Israel abide by the ruling? Israel considers itself to be above the law. Humanitarian conditions in Gaza are not hidden. It is very miserable, prices are very high, and there is no monitoring of prices. Businessmen put the prices they wish, and they are not being controlled by the Ministry of Economy or any law.
The order came very late. The war has been ongoing for about 6 months, and now the International Court of Justice has found out that the people are on the verge of starvation. What we care about is implementing this order. But is there anyone to pressure Israel to implement it? I don't think so.
Limited access to clean water amid unrelenting Israeli bombardment poses a serious risk for Gazans throughout the besieged territory. Some displaced Palestinians explained the suffering and how they are struggling with access to drinkable water.
There is no fresh water in the school that shelters refugees. That's why we come here to fill water. It comes only half an hour a day. Water in the school is undrinkable. It's salty. What can we do? We have to walk 1 kilometer to get water.
People are suffering because of lack of water, considering it's salty too. We fill water in gallons instead of water tanks. It is really a suffering when it comes to obtaining fresh water. We have to queue for everything. We walk for an hour in total. Sometimes we return empty-handed without water.
We are in the month of Ramadan and we are struggling to get water to our homes. It is difficult and we are suffering from a great deal of hardship. We don't even have food to give us the energy to go collect the water, let alone the innocent children, women and the elderly.
Our problem with water has been a serious problem since the war began. Not just today, we are suffering a lot from water because all pipes and pumps stopped working since the beginning of the war.
Israeli forces carried out fresh raids throughout the occupied West Bank overnight, leaving a teenager dead and several other young Palestinians injured. The victim, identified as 13-year-old Mu'tasim Nabil Abu Abed, was hit by Israeli gunfire during a military incursion into the town of Kapatiya near the city of Jenin. Two others injured in the same raid, with one reported in serious condition. Clashes also broke out after Palestinian youth resisted Israeli raids on cities of Qalqilia and Ariha. There are similar clashes in the town of Beit Amer, where a 13-year-old child was injured by bullet shrapnel and dozens of others suffered tear gas inhalation. Palestinians in the occupied territories have endured violent Israeli raids almost on a daily basis since the onset of the regime's genocidal war on Gaza. Meanwhile, the U.S. has in recent days quietly authorized the transfer of billions of dollars in bombs and fighter jets to Israel. U.S. officials say new arms packages include over 1,800 bombs. Now, these are 2,000-pound bombs that can demolish entire city blocks and are almost never supposed to be used in populated areas. Israel, however, uses them extensively in Gaza. Last week, the State Department also authorized transfer of 25 F-35 fighter jets and engines to Israel. Earlier reports said the U.S. had quietly made over 100 weapon sales to Israel since onslaught on Gaza began on the 7th of October. The arms supplies go against the U.S. call for a Gaza ceasefire. The Islamic resistance in Iraq says it's targeted a military site in the Syrian-occupied Golan Heights in retaliation for Israel's ongoing air and artillery strikes on Gaza. The resistance group said drone attack is in response to a massacre committed by Israel against civilians in Gaza, including the women, the children, and elderly. In recent months, the Islamic resistance in Iraq has carried out a number of set attacks against Israeli positions. It's also hit U.S. military bases in Iraq and Syria in retaliation for Washington's support for Israel's campaign of genocide. Thousands of Jordanians have marched on the Israeli embassy in the capital, Amman, for a sixth straight night in solidarity with the Palestinians of Gaza. Protesters slammed Israeli crimes, especially attacks on hospitals. They waved Palestinian and Jordanian flags and called for an end to Jordan's unpopular peace treaty with Tel Aviv. They also urged the authorities to expel the Israeli ambassador from Amman. Demonstrators voiced support for Palestinian resistance groups and people in the Gaza Strip. Jordanian security forces have in recent days broken up several such demonstrations with tear gas and arrests and left several people injured. Now, Jordan, which hosts over 2.4 million Palestinian refugees, has witnessed numerous pro-Palestine rallies since Israel launched its onslaught on Gaza back in early October. Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
This is the Heart of Life pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Saturdays. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Bismillah, words that seekers of sanctuary repeatedly recite, words that the very cautious in search of protection often repeat. I seek refuge with Allah, the Exalted above all, from the oppression of the unjust, from the deceitful malice the envious use to lay snares and traps, from the injustice and outrage of the tyrants, and I sing his praise. Do better and go beyond other praisers. O Allah, thou art one, has no partner, and is the Lord and Master without being made. There is no discrepancy or nonsense in thy commands, nor there is lawlessness in thy kingdom. I beseech thee to send blessings on Muhammad, thy servant, thy messenger. To let me ask thee for enlightenment and inspiration, so as to be thankful for thy bounties, which alone get thy approval ultimately. To help me to obey thee and instinctively worship thee, and make me deserve thy rewards on account of thy very patronage. And have mercy on me, and prevent me from breaking in the bounds of thy prohibitions, as far as I am kept alive, and show the way unto that which is useful and advantageous till I go on survive. To let me take to heart the meanings of thy book, and by its reading, throw down the heavy burden of sins, and receive welfare and salvation as a gift. Let not my family and friends who love me leave me alone. Let thy favors reach me in abundance during the remainder of my life, exactly as they used to be made available for me, in full, in the days gone by. O, the Most Merciful.
Ayahs, 30 days. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. A monotheist person not only reflects on the Quran, but also tries to explain the ayahs of this heavenly scripture to others and make them familiar with its teachings. Explicating of the Quranic teachings, first of all, was the duty of the Prophet and his infallible successors, every faithful too, according to the extent that they had learned from the Ahlul Bayt, embarked on this heavy duty. So the ulema, that are Muslim scholars, took over this duty after the occultation of the 12th infallible successor of the Prophet, Imam Mahdi, may God hasten his reappearance, and have seriously continued this job till the present day. Today, this duty has become highly important due to the broad assault of enemies against the beliefs of Islam and humanity. The topic of Ramadan special series is self-sacrifice and martyrdom seeking, with a focus on Ayah 111 of Surah Tawbah of the Noble Quran. Stay tuned, please. We have all heard that the Messenger of Mercy, Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, said in part of his sermon on the verge of arrival of the blessed month of Ramadan that the gates of hell are closed and the gates of paradise are open. He also said that Satan and his troops are tied in chains in this month. So, it is the best time for getting close to God through doing righteous deeds. Ramadan is the best period to achieve the best degrees in servitude of Allah. In part of Ayah 111 of Surah Tawbah, we read, "Indeed Allah has bought from the faithful their souls and their possessions for paradise to be theirs." In every dealing, there are five pillars. God says that He is the buyer and the faithful are the sellers. Their souls and properties are the merchandise, and paradise is the price of the dealing. These were the four pillars of this dealing. Then Allah continues, "They fight in the way of Allah, kill and are killed." Then Allah mentions the fifth pillar, which is the valid document for the dealing. He says, "A promise binding upon him in the Torah and the Evangel and the Quran." Then Allah stresses, "And who is truer to his promise than Allah?" In the end, he congratulates the seller, saying, "So rejoice in the bargain you have made with him. And that is the great success." Whenever something is said briefly in the Quran, it is explained in the following ayahs. Here too, Allah mentions nine characteristics of the faithful who sell their souls to Allah are penitent, devout, celebrators of Allah's praise, who fast, who bow in prayer, prostrate in prayer, bid what is right, and forbid what is wrong, and keep Allah's bounds. Then Allah tells the Prophet, "And give good news to the faithful." When the faithless of Quraysh decided to kill the Prophet at night in his house, Imam Ali, peace upon him, slept instead of him in his bed so that the Prophet could leave the city secretly. God told his two great angels, Gabriel and Michael, "I have made you brothers and ordained the life of one longer than the other. Which of you is ready to have a shorter life?" Both of them asked for longer life. God then said, I have made Ali ibn Abi Talib and the Prophet as brothers of one another. Now Ali has slept in the bed of his cousin, Muhammad Mustafa, instead of him to be killed and preserve his life. Now go to the earth and guard him. Then Gabriel stood over Imam Ali's head and Michael stood below his feet. Gabriel extolled Imam Ali with the words, "Allah is boastful of you," to the angels. At that point, Ayah 207 of Surah Baqarah was revealed about this unmatched virtue of Imam Ali, which reads, "And among the people is he who sells his soul seeking the pleasure of Allah, and Allah is kind to servants." One of the best gifts of Allah to the faithful is martyrdom. Why is it a gift? Because everyone will die and there is no escape from it. Our most serious concern is related to after death, as we don't know what will happen to us. But martyrdom, which means being killed in the way of God, turns this unclear and worrying future to an honorable happening in both this world and the hereafter. The soul is the thing that men will lose inevitably, but Allah sells it with martyrdom and pays paradise as the price. This is not exclusive for Muslims. Allah has promised this in the Torah and the Evangel too. Moreover, it should be noted that martyrdom is among the concepts which few will be qualified enough to attain it. The most important factor to attain martyrdom is self-sacrifice, and the highest self-sacrifice is to sacrifice one's soul as the most precious property. Martyr is a person who sacrifices his soul consciously and insightfully in the way of Allah. It means that he or she prefer Allah's satisfaction to theirs. They abandon their soul, their children, their properties, their positions, and all beauties and pleasures of the world. In Iran, too, martyrs lost their souls. They were the martyrs before the Islamic Revolution, the martyrs of the eight-year imposed war, martyrs who defended the holy shrines in Iraq and Syria, and those who were martyred for security of people in cities and borders. They lost their souls, but not their religion. Their only goal was to obey Allah and revive his religion. Martyr Mehdi Zainuddin, the renowned Iranian commander of Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib division during the Holy Defense against Saddam's Ba'athist army, said on the self-sacrifice of the combatants, "In one of the operations we faced with barbed wire and couldn't open the passage. We had to cross from there. The group commander gathered the forces and consulted with them. Everyone said something, but the best suggestion was that one of two persons lie of the barbed wire so that others could pass over them. Everyone volunteered and wanted to open the way for the group. At last, lay on the barbed wire with their faces. When they were asked as why they lay that way, they answered, they didn't want to make others feel shy when seeing their faces."
This is the Heart of Life pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to Have It Out with Galloway. Every single week, I'll be here discussing the hottest topics, the biggest world events, but perhaps from a perspective that you will not find easily on the mainstream media. The question this evening is the UK complicit in the Gaza genocide? Well, as the old joke goes, is the Pope a Catholic? Do bears defecate in the woods? The United Kingdom's not just complicit in the current genocide going on in the Gaza Strip, it is complicit in the entire genocidal story of more than 75 years of the calvary of the Palestinian people. I sit in the British Parliament, where in the very chamber I sit in the very room that I'm in every day, the Palestinian disaster, Nakba, catastrophe, was authored when the Prime Minister of Britain, on behalf of one people, promised to the Zionist Federation, on behalf of a second people, the land that belonged to a third people. None of the three people concerned were, of course, consulted. And after that Balfour Declaration, more than 100 years ago, we began the descent down the bloody staircase which led us to this disaster today. Now, breaking news, the United Nations Security Council has called for a ceasefire for the month of Ramadan. They hope that it will become a lasting ceasefire. But even a lasting ceasefire implies some kind of event at the end which might return the violence, the massacres, the bloodshed, the torture. The truth is, we don't know at the time of recording if Israel will tell the United Nations Security Council to stick their resolution where the sun don't shine. We don't know what the members of the Security Council will do about it, were that to be the case. It may be that although he's huffing and puffing, the gangster Netanyahu truly wanted this ceasefire to become into effect. It's possible. We can't trust a word any of these actors say. Neither the actors in Israel and not the actors in the Western world, in the presidencies, in the chanceries, in the parliaments of the Western world. It's perfectly possible that all of this has been carefully choreographed. We must pray, of course, that there will be a ceasefire, even for a day or a week of relief from the shot and shell of the Western-backed Israeli occupation force, which has laid waste. Its grim reaper has now taken the lives and the blood of well over 120,000 people who've either been murdered or maimed, mutilated and wounded. Of course, the United Kingdom is complicit within it. The endless overflights of British aeroplanes, Air Force jets from the bases in Cyprus, the selling of weapons from Britain to Israel, the exchange of intelligence information, where Israel is effectively a sixth eye, the five eyes, the white Anglo-Saxon five eyes that dominate the intelligence world, has long been shared with Israel. And in this last 170 days and more, when the catastrophe has reached the depths that it has reached, the five eyes, the six eyes, have been operating as one. And what a sight it has been. All this death, all this destruction, almost unbearable, even for those only watching it on our telephones, and certainly unbearable for the victims, the Palestinian victims. You know, it's coming up for Easter in the Western world, in the Eastern Christian world. It's a time when we think about resurrection. Will the British government, in some kind of act of epiphany, now mend the great crime that it has committed against the people of Palestine? I'm joined tonight, and in fact every week, with a group of distinguished panelists, as well as an interested live studio audience. Our guest tonight, Low Key, is a rapper, a hip-hop artist, an investigative journalist, and his critically acclaimed music has millions of streams on Spotify, over 25,000 digital downloads, and over 45 million YouTube views. Low Key breaks the ground for independent political music. He's also the host of The Watchdog, a podcast on Mint Press News. Dr. Marwa Osman is a journalist and a presenter. She holds a PhD and two masters and is a university lecturer at the Lebanese International University and Maarif University. She hosts and produces political shows, as well as being a writer, with her comments being published by a whole variety of outlets. And Fra Hughes is a journalist, author, and human rights activist from the north of Ireland. He has written several books, including An Activist's Tale, My Walk with Palestine, which chronicles his experiences as an international activist and his involvement with the Viva Palestina 5 medical aid convoy. His work focuses on the role of activism in promoting justice and human rights. And a plethora of interested and interesting audience guests joining us from all over the world who'll be chipping in throughout the show. But let me turn first, if I may, to my good friend, a sage, a seer, a philosopher king. To say he's a rapper and a hip-hop artist, which he is, and a highly successful one, is not even half the story, as you are about to find out if you haven't seen him before. Low Key, thanks for joining us. I suppose it's the most obvious question in the world. Is the UK complicit in the genocide in Gaza? I know that your answer is the same as mine, yes, but to what extent and in what ways is the UK complicit in the genocide in Gaza?
Well, thank you so much, George, for the very kind introduction. I'm certainly not worthy of the praise that you heaped upon me. But to start with, it's important that people are aware that Britain has a secret military agreement which it signed with Israel in 2020. We do not know the details of that agreement, but it's very likely that it stipulates some level of involvement if either side officially enter hostilities. What we do know is the R1 shadow spy plane of the Royal Air Force has been flying almost daily over Gaza, and one of the key specialities of that plane is target acquisition. So it would lead you to believe that there has been some involvement on the side of that. We also know that the RAF has sent over 50 military flights to Tel Aviv from the British base in Akrotiri in Cyprus. We also know that around 9 Israeli military jets have landed in this country throughout the bombing of Gaza. We do not know the details of what was on those flights. We know that the US has used the British bases in Cyprus to transport weapons to Israel. We know that Britain, for example, According to Claudia Webb, Member of Parliament, she stated that Britain has granted 26 arms export licenses to Israel during this time. But what we also know is that from the F-35 to the F-16 to the Apache helicopters to even the sniper rifles that Israel uses, they used in 2018 to squash the Great March of Return, where Palestinians were attempting to exercise their right under UN Resolution 194, that even within the sniper rifles, there are components that come from Britain. There are over 100 companies which function in Britain that are involved in the construction of the F-35 fighter jet, which Israel has used to wreak such devastation over Gaza. So really, we are looking at a picture where it's not clear where British intelligence and Israeli intelligence begins and ends on either side. Britain, Israel, and the United States are very much part of a trilateral security arrangement, which sees key functions of the Israelis outsourced to the British, and also vice versa, key functions of the British outsourced to the Israelis. So unfortunately, I would say the answer to your question is definitely.
Thanks for that. We'll come back to you. Let's take a view from Aisha, who's in London, on our audience wall, a new innovation. Very glad to see you, Aisha. You're the first person to speak from that wall. What would you like to ask?
Hi, George. I wanted to ask you, what do you make of this UN resolution? If Israel does follow the ceasefire for the rest of Ramadan, what will it do, or what do you think would happen in the West Bank, knowing what happened last time during the ceasefire, where they simply upped their aggression and the murders and the violence in the West Bank?
Well, I mean, one possibility is that Israel refuses to heed the UN Security Council resolution, and the Security Council is then forced to take a decision about what it will do in response to that defiance, or Israel will pretend to be accepting the resolution and, as you put it, merely displace their activity, switch the Murdar Incorporated from Gaza to Jerusalem to the West Bank. And what will the Security Council do then? I think that Biden abstaining on the motion is a significant thing. I don't, on balance, believe Israel wanted him to abstain. I think they wanted him to veto it. But time will tell if it's all some macabre dance of death. But the fact that the resolution passed at all, with Britain voting in favor, it's been abstaining for the last 170 days. The fact that Britain voted for a ceasefire is a tribute to each and every protester, demonstrator, boycotter, letters to the editor, everybody who's ever done anything to stand up against this genocide can take some credit for forcing the British government into the position that it took today. Let me go on to our second guest and introduce her to you, Dr. Marwa Osman, journalist, academic, and activist, presenter on television, and very widely read writer. Dr. Marwa joins us from Lebanon. Dr. Marwa, what's your take on the question we're posing and on the Security Council resolution?
Thank you for having me on your show, George, and condolences to my brothers and sisters in Palestine for the grave loss of human souls in this past 6 months. And let me start from your last question and then go to your first. The UN resolution was a bit of something anticipated by many, but a lot suspicious by others as well, like me. I'm very suspicious about how this is going to be implemented in Gaza, whether or not Israel is going to comply with this temporary ceasefire. And I have a lot of questions as to why now, how come the U.S. Decided to abstain from the vote, and what is the result going to be mirrored on the ground, whether the Israeli entity will comply or not, whether they will be sending the delegation to Washington or not. A lot of questions, but especially why now? It's a very big question, and whether or not this is just for show, because if you look at the points in that ceasefire, there some of them are really very hard to implement if you're going to just talk about Israeli captives and not talk about the Palestinian hostages, more than 8,000 Palestinian hostages in Israeli entity detention centers that this resolution did not even mention. So I have a lot of suspicion concerning this and the application of this so-called ceasefire. Now, going back to your first question, whether or not the UK is complicit, I would have to start by saying that today the Minister of Health, the Ministry of Health in Gaza, issued the latest toll of martyrs and injured, and it says that 32,333 Palestinian civilians were murdered by the Zionist entity, and 74,694 have been injured since October 7, 2023. And despite that, the UK government still refuses to suspend its arms transfer to the Zionist Israeli entity, and despite the fact that it knows that UK licensed equipment are being used, have been used, and will most probably be used to carry out genocide, facilitate serious violations of human rights, of international humanitarian law, including war crimes. And they don't really care, despite the fact that it is now complicit, and not, that's not me saying, that's a report by the United Nations, the Human Rights Watch. They issued a report saying that the current situation places actually the UK government at risk of failing to prevent the genocide. No, as further than that, it is also being complicit in serious violations of international law, including the violations under Geneva Convention, the Arms Trade Treaty, and domestic laws in the UK itself. And George, for the first time, we have seen UN special rapporteurs saying this, tweeting about this, posting about this, and saying that they have been warning, not from now, since before 2024 entered, that the transfer of the weapons and ammunition that is made by the UK to Zionist Israel is a very heavy violation of international humanitarian law and must stop. And yet the UK government did not stop. Furthermore, it is also complicit in genocide because there are UK citizens, George, who are heavily involved in this act of genocide. Whom can I be referring to? For instance, there's Aryeh Yitzhak King, who's a British citizen and also the deputy mayor of the occupied Al-Quds. He's a UK citizen and he's complicit in genocide. You have the very infamous Ilan Levy, who's from North London, who's also a spokesperson for the Israeli entity government, despite the fact that there were some talk in the past week that he was sacked from that job. You have Peter Lerner, who's also originally from Kenton, Northern London, and he became a very prominent figure in the Israeli entity's occupation army as a lieutenant colonel and a spokesperson. And we have Richard Hecht, who's also a Scottish colonel and a voice in the Israeli entity occupation army. And all of these, if they are not putting the UK government in a complicit position, it pushes us to have serious questions regarding the UK's policies, regarding its own citizens participating in genocide and not saying a word about that, despite the fact that they have been arresting and harassing protesters who are just asking and demanding ceasefire. You've also have a lot of complicity when it comes to the UK's role in stopping the fund of the most important UN agency, which is the UNRWA, the UN's relief agency in Gaza. They are complicit in that genocide for pushing, not only stop, but also pushing other states to stop the funding of the UNRWA, despite the fact that there is now starvation, famine in Gaza because of this genocidal war that has been going on since October 7. And added to that, there is a lot of charities working within the UK government's border that have been warning the UK government that they are committing and they are part of facilitating serious violations of humanitarian law, of international humanitarian and humanitarian rights law. They are saying that they are pushing right now for a new wave of activism, asking the public and asking those NGOs who work for aid usually to stop paying taxes for the UK government because it is now complicit in genocide. There's a very important campaign going on in the UK right now called, I think it's called No Tax for Genocide campaign. And it's, by the way, it is completely legal. It's UK officials and part... people who are part of the government who are complicit in genocide, or at least who support Zionist Israel, don't have any way in saying that this is illegal or this is this should not be happening or it's a violation of UK domestic law, because there is several legal duties that are included in the 1945 UN Charter and the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court and also the Terrorism Act of the year 2000 that give a legal foundation for tax resistance against a government like the UK, who's completely complicit in genocide in
Gaza. Well, it all sounds very much like complicity to me, Dr. Marwa. Thank you very much indeed for that opening statement. Fra Hughes is a man I've travelled to Gaza with on the Viva Palestina sanctions-busting convoys. He's an author and an activist and a regular broadcaster. He's joining us from Ireland. Fra, it won't come as any surprise to you as an Irishman that the British are being rather powerfully accused of being complicit in genocide. What say you?
Absolutely. I agree 100% with everything that's been said so far. We're witnessing the genocide that's happening on the ground right now in real time, in front of our very eyes through social media. I saw a photograph recently which showed a family in Gaza breaking their fast at iftar with water, lemons and grass. Now, George, you'll be well aware of the famine we had in 1847 in Ireland, which was a man-made famine, a weapon of war used by the British to subdue the Irish population and also to end the Irish question in British politics for several generations. The people in Ireland died by the side of the road eating grass. So when I saw that picture, I was quite touched. If I could maybe just for 1 second touch on this UN resolution. Prior to this resolution, the talks taking place in Cairo and different other capitals around the supposed grounds and boundaries for a permanent stroke temporary ceasefire. Hamas was looking for, you know, a minimum of 6 weeks, perhaps going into 6 months, where they would release the Israeli prisoners that they have held under control.
Video is breaking up now. Not a great video, but a great contribution from Fra Hughes. Let's go back to the video wall and ask Syed Mohsen in London for his point of view.
Well, I listened to the UN output with a keen ear, and nothing's changed. You've got an inept UN, which is basically controlled by the usual global mafia suspects, and they managed to just about, after 5 months, get essentially 2 weeks of respite for the Palestinians. Now, the reality, I mean, in the short term, I mean, what I wanted to put to you, George, was really to look at what has changed now that we've just seen Israel unveil itself completely. You know, the emperor has no clothes now. There was a time when Zionism was made respectable here, but I think most of the public, even in the West now, understand what's really going on. And there was a time when the two-state solution was the only game in town. And yet it's also being pushed again now by the likes of Biden, etc. They're all still pushing for this two-state solution. But the new reality seems to be that the axis of resistance, of which Hamas and the Islamic Jihad and all the other Palestinian resistance forces are now an integral part, is very much active and alive and has shown itself to be able to resist. How is this going to shape the future of Palestine in terms of what the interests of the Americans are or the Israelis, who by the way, the current ultra-Zionist, ultra-nationalist leadership is also not after any kind of two-state solution. I mean, is the two-state solution ever an option, given that these guys are still now pushing it, or is the one-state solution actually now the most likely one to be put forward by military means?
Thank you to Dr. Marwa, to Fra Hughes, to Loki, our panelists, to all of the studio audience, and my apologies for those of you who didn't get in. Have it out with Galloway. It's been marvellous for me. I hope it was for you. And if it was, come back for Have It Out with Galloway. Come and have a go if you think you're hard enough.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Call of Islam page will welcome to another episode of the program Viewpoints. I am Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Mahdavi and Sheikh Nur Muhammad. Sheikh Nur Muhammad, assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me.
And Sheikh Mahdavi, assalamu alaikum to you.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
For today's discussion, we want to talk about the significance of Laylatul Qadr, the night of Qadr, roughly translated into the night of power or something like that. We want to talk about the significance of this night, which day or night is considered to be Laylatul Qadr, and what are the recommended actions during this night. Sheikh Mahdavi, let's start with you, brother. Let's start with the naming itself, Laylatul Qadr. What is it exactly?
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Actually, the literal translation for Laylatul Qadr is the night of Taqdir. Taqdir means to, we can interpret or explain it as measuring. So measuring the destiny,
yes,
of Muslims. We believe that in that night, that very night, the destiny, the whole destiny of 1 year, yes, for all human being will be destined. Actions, mm-hmm, during the year, it will be destined, yes, by its moment, its, yes, very moment to be done or not to be done.
You mean the year, the